News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
Elections looming, are we overlooking the voting rights of Irish emigrants? We're joined by Emma D'Souza, writer and political commentator, and Dr. Elaine Callanan, a lecturer in modern Irish history at Carlow College, St. Patrick's. Emma, to you first. Current regulations mean Ireland, Irish people not planning to return home within 18 months are ineligible to vote. You think this is too restrictive?
Morning. Yes, I do think it's too restrictive. And I think it's important to preface when we talk about Irish citizens outside the state, we're not talking about the diaspora, because often when we have these conversations that can come up, it's important to be clear that we're talking about eligible Irish citizens. And evidence does show that the largest population is actually up in Northern Ireland and then again in Britain. So talking about immigrant voting, I mean, immigrant voting is not a controversial concept. It's a global democratic norm. Over 125 countries and territories enfranchise their citizens abroad. Ireland is an outlier. It has one of the most restrictive and exclusionary electoral systems. And it is something that in 2024, we really should be having a genuine debate on how we can enfranchise citizens abroad.
Okay. Dr. Elaine Callanan, you heard what Emma had to say there. It's a global democratic norm. We're unusually restrictive in Ireland.
Yes, but I also think we're unusual insofar as that we have quite a lot of emigration, even short-term emigration out of Ireland. And not to throw figures at people, but if we look at our population, it's 5.1 million or thereabouts. And in about 2023, 60,000 people left Ireland to live abroad. So my concern actually would be that if we go beyond what we have currently at the moment, that people living abroad might have a greater say in some of the election results in Ireland than the people actually living in the country itself, particularly when you move out of areas like Dublin and over to the west of Ireland. And while, you know, there is people in Northern Ireland and the United Kingdom, an awful lot of our young population have actually emigrated to places like Australia. So their ability to actually remain in touch with what's going on the ground at home is really rather slim. So I would have concerns about extending our voting rights, given when we benchmark ourselves against some of the other countries of that 125, our rate of emigration is higher.
OK, Emma D'Souza.
Well, actually, if you look at the figures on Irish citizens who leave, you'll also see that Irish citizens return. And over the course of 2018 to 2023, over 144,000 Irish citizens returned from living abroad. And we do see, on average, between 30 and 35,000 Irish citizens returning to Ireland every year. That figure of 60,000 was actually an outlier year. It's not an average figure on year on year for who leave. And I think it's important to note that, you know, a lot of our young people, they're leaving Ireland for better opportunities. They don't abandon their culture, their history, or their connection to their home in the process. And Irish citizens that are living outside the state are impacted by policies at home, including taxation, certain forms of contributory pensions, descendant citizenship, and immigration policies.
Okay.
And whether they can
actually come back.
All
right. Dr. Elaine Callanan.
Yeah, well, I would agree to a certain degree with that. I would also argue the point that when you are living outside of the home country, your heart might be back in your home country, but not necessarily your knowledge of what is going on the ground. And really, in the most recent past, those that are emigrating from Ireland are not really what we would call economic migrants. And there are a lot of kind of young people in their 20s and 30s who are seeking like adventure, if you like, on the one hand, and the experience of working abroad. Now, there are some that are concerned over things like housing. But I know from my own personal experience of living abroad for a period of 3 years that, you know, news reports in places like Australia, the United States of America, and even Britain itself do not focus on what is going on the ground in Ireland. So you would have to have very active citizens.
Emma, how about that? I mean, I have friends I went to college with who left Ireland 35 years ago. I mean, should they get the vote?
Well, I think it's important to know that there are any number of modern electoral systems that we can look at in terms of having a genuine debate on what it might look like for Ireland.
Could you address that question, though?
Well, I think that if you look at other countries, some have absolutely no time limit. Some do have time limits. I think that's a debate that the people of Ireland should be having. What kind of system do we want to have? Should there be a time limit? Should there not be a time limit? Should it be for certain elections? there are different ways that you can fit this criteria, and it's important that we have that conversation on doing so. If you look, for example, at the United Kingdom, the current Conservative government, the Tories, wouldn't be seen, at least by me, as progressive. However, they did actually just remove a barrier to voting from abroad. Previously, there was a 15-year time limit. That has now been removed entirely. So we see that other countries...
What percentage of Britons would live abroad compared to percentage of Irish people? Do we know those figures?
Well, I think when we talk a lot about this debate over how many Irish citizens are outside of the 26 counties, it is really important to remember that the majority are actually in Northern Ireland. When we have this conversation, the figures.
There's also loads of, like, Jude Bellingham, the footballer, has an Irish passport. Like, does he get a vote in the general election?
Well, it's going to depend on the debate that we have in Ireland. If you look at the, you know, the Convention on the Constitution in 2013 or the 2018 Citizens Assembly, whenever people are given the information, given the facts, and given a chance to have this conversation, they vote in favour of extending the franchise. Now, so far, the debate has been around presidential voting rights. But we have still a conversation that's in its infancy and that, frankly, in my view, is rooted in a lot of outdated stereotypes and exclusionary view, a conservative view about voting, and also one that does not account for the lived experiences.
All right. Elaine, brief last word.
OK, well, I'll just say that there are British citizens living abroad, but when you benchmark it against the populations, like you have something about 93,000 British citizens living abroad, but the 66 odd million people living in Britain. So there is a slight difference there. And then the other big question in relation to this is who's going to pay for this? Like, this is going to have huge administrative costs. So if reversing the American system of no taxation without representation, maybe there should be no representation without taxation.
OK, we'll leave it there.
I can't stand that comment. I'm sorry, but there's no link between taxation and voting rights. And it is really incorrect to make that comment.
There actually is in the United States of America.
There isn't actually. The US law stipulates that those who live abroad cannot be denied the right to vote based on taxation. US law protects the right to vote and does not connect it to taxation.
Unfortunately, we do have to leave it there. Emma D'Souza, Dr. Elaine Callan, thanks to both of you for talking to News Talk Breakfast this morning. Let us know what you think of it.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
Weekday mornings at 7 on News Talk.